This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
You can't condone what's going on, but if you're Aston Villa, you are entitled to be absolutely disgusted.
When I go home late at night, this is a song that I really like to sing right now, so I'll play it for you. It's called My Old Man.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, the editor of myoldmansaid.com. Joining me this week, could only get one guest on this week, and it's Mr. Chris Budd.
Hello.
Welcome. Actually, you weren't on the last show, so it's perfect that you're on this one to restore the balance in the My Old Man Said.
I've been getting back to match fitness. I was benched.
No, exactly. Yeah, we thought we needed to freshen you up with the playoffs on the horizon.
We've got a big finale ahead of us.
Indeed, we need everybody completely match fit. So, Mr. Budd, how are you?
I'm very well. What's
been happening in the cult of Buddhism?
Well, Buddhism's just got back from Jersey, which was nice.
Dodging taxes again?
I've got a new record out, so I need to get those royalties down.
I've heard about this record. Apparently it's not very good, according to Dan Rogers on the last show.
Ah, yes, he's still quite bitter about the Hogan touch count results. He's getting his ass handed to him, so... I think Dan illegally downloaded the record. It's on LimeWire.
He's not that good with that touch count. I mean, Max hit the nail on the head when he in the last one when he said, did Hogan even play?
It was a tapping, wasn't it?
That was even a clue for Dan when Max said 12 touches, and all you got to do is go one lower and you've won. And he went one higher. So I don't know.
Schoolboy.
Yep. I do apologize for the delay in these podcasts coming out. We put the last one out, which should have gone out pre-Easter, but due to technical difficulties and time involved before I went off to Amsterdam to visit my sister.
And frankly, we were getting bored of Villa winning every week. We were running out of things to talk about.
Well, I'd actually booked the flight for this Easter trip when Villa were getting their asses handed to them. So I thought the playoffs were over and Easter was a dead duck. And obviously two games happened in that Bolton and Millwall where we went up to 10 wins. So I had to watch from afar, unfortunately. But it's always good to be in Amsterdam where my new team for next season, which I'm thinking about getting a season ticket for, Ajax, are just killing everybody in the Champions League.
They're almost as entertaining to watch as Villa, aren't they?
Yeah, if Villa didn't suddenly sprout into this amazing 10-game run, and which is now a 12-game unbeaten run, I would be tempted to move out to Amsterdam and live a few streets down from my sister.
You could literally live the high life.
Exactly. Live the high life and get an Ajax season ticket and watch us dominate Europe.
We could call you David van der Michael.
Yeah, well, and you could call me other things if you want. I'm sure a lot of Villa fans would call me other things if I ditched the Villa for Ajax, but that's another story. But thankfully, we are heading into the playoffs and we don't even have to think of get-out plans and nonsense such as that. Anyway, let's get on to this show, and we are sitting comfortably in the box seat on all Villa issues because the actual FA stroke EFL, whatever, whoever decides these things, have passed their verdict on the shenanigans that happened at Allen Road. So we have the full knowledge on the situation, and we don't have to hope that they don't fuck up and not rescind Mr. Al-Ghazi's red card. That has happened, so no ban for him. He's good for the playoffs. Patrick Bamford has been given a 2-game ban. They should have just given him Al-Ghazi's ban, really. That would have been more fitting, I thought.
To be honest, Bamford should have just stayed in the team. He seems like more of a liability when he's on the field.
Yeah, no, to be, because he was meant to be this golden boy when he was out on loan. Was it to Bristol?
He's been everywhere, hasn't he?
Yeah, and now you're thinking, well, if we're playing Leeds in the playoffs at any juncture, then if he's playing, then jobs are good, because I'd rather have Tammy Abraham. Thank you very much.
Cheers, Tammy.
Anyway, coming up in the show, speaking of the Scott Hogan touch count meter, unfortunately, you haven't got any competition in this episode, but we'll see how you get along with his three appearances since the last time we did it. In the show, we dissect the craziness of what was Leeds away, as our winning run that got up to 10 games comes to an end. But still, it doesn't matter, because there's only one thing that matters, and that's getting through two semi-finals, home and away, and then winning at Wembley and getting the fuck out of this league. So we'll talk about what's happening in terms of playoff issues. We'll quickly look at the Norwich game as well. And we'll also have a look at, speaking of the playoffs, why Villa haven't yet beaten any of the top four teams in 7 attempts. Right, first of all, 3 points. And to kick us off, Mr. Budd.
Well, on the topic of promotion, obviously, firstly, we can give our congratulations to Norwich and Sheffield United for earning automatics. We won't be getting too cringy about it, not like the club managed by one Steve Bruce, who put out a rather strange statement about their bitter rivals. Cue the music. Few things in life unite and divide opinion like football, but one thing at this stage of every season is undebatable, and I would like to offer the warm congratulations of everyone at Sheffield Wednesday to everyone at our neighbours Sheffield United for their achievement of promotion. We may be rivals, but we are all friends of the same city that holds such a unique tradition in the world of football. Recognition in the Premier League can only benefit Sheffield, and we wish United well. Whilst promising our loyal supporters that we will be giving our absolute best to ensure Wednesday will be tasting the same success this time next year, we must also congratulate Norwich City on their promotion and offer our commiserations to Ipswich Town, Bolton Wanderers and Rotherham United. We wish you a speedy return to the Championship. Ugh. Yuck. Horrible.
Now, who wrote that shite?
Yeah, he's getting... Is this the kid who's just got sacked from the Villa?
Probably. He's not a kid.
It's all about the engagement.
And I think they wanted engagement just for people slagging him off, saying, delete this, delete this, delete this. It's a bit cringy, I thought.
It's just weird.
I mean, can you imagine Villa doing that to the Blues? I can't really.
Can you imagine Villa doing that to anyone?
Two lines, congratulations, you know, Sheffield United and Norwich, you know, fair enough on a tweet, but to write a whole prose and verse on it and be as cringy. I mean, commiserations to Ipswich, Banff and the Netherlands.
We all share the same city. Fuck off. One love, Sheffield. Fuck off.
Cue Michael Jackson, We Are the World. A bit of a weird one there. Just jealousy, I think, from Sheffield Wednesday. Point number two, David De Gea. Now, my father, my old man, is a Manchester United fan, and he's never liked De Gea from day one. And I must admit, the man has no idea how to defend his near post. But he's very good at social media-friendly Hollywood saves. And, I mean, he's a good goalkeeper, I suppose, all in. But he uses legs over hands too much. Anyway, cut to the chase. Basically cost United top four this season. Would that be a fact?
Yeah, amongst other things, but yeah.
Basically lost Liverpool the title. Is that a fact?
I think for the sake, for the argument of clickbait, yes.
Well, I'm not going to put it in the title. But, you know, what would you be going for in the playoffs? De Gea on this season's form or Jed Steer?
Jed Steer, thank you very much.
But still, let's not put off Paris Saint-Germain, who have reportedly offered £90 million for De Gea. You know, this was the kind of figure that Real Madrid were meant to, almost got him for. I mean, there was that, remember that season a couple of seasons ago when... He was about to leave, and you just thought, well, if they're going to offer that much, just, sell him down the river, just get the money. And, we're talking about Paris Saint-Germain paying him almost £500,000 a week, and it's like...
Which is bananas for a goalkeeper.
How fucking stupid has this game got? I mean, it's ridiculous.
And if it wasn't getting more stupid, aren't United about to trigger a €120 million buyout clause for the Atletico Madrid goalkeeper in... as his replacement? It's just absurd.
Yeah, the Slovenian keeper, Jan Oblak. Oblak. And you're just thinking, hang on a minute, who's running Manchester
this
United?
This is just because absurd, isn't it?
Business-wise, they're just a bunch of idiots because they've just been buying players for top dollar. And this is one of their problems. They've been buying these players, not really fitting them into a team or looking at it long term. I mean, obviously they've swapped managers. They haven't had a good run of a manager for a long time, but there should be, what Villa are trying to put in now, where you've got like your head coach, but the overall plan is, they're with the director of football, whatever. So when you're buying in squad building, you're buying it for the long term, and, managers, you can swap and change. But if you want to turn Manchester United round, you got to also turn it around in the transfer market in terms of if somebody's dumb enough to come along for £90 million to get David De Gea, I'm pretty sure you can get a decent keeper for less than £10 million, who's actually in better form than David De Gea.
And one that might actually fit in with your team. You're going to go and spend €120 million on a goalkeeper that might not fit in with the unit, or there's no guarantee. For €120 million, you want an absolute banker, don't you?
Yeah, the bottom line is, you can get away, because if you're going to get £90 million, you can get away with spending, over the top £30 million, and, you're profiting £60 million. I don't understand why you would pay an extra... what is it, like 15, an extra 15 million after you've got the sale of the century for a keeper? Is absolutely ridiculous. Anyway, that is an example of this game's fucked. And the repercussions are, when you look at, and this is point number three, total losses in the championship last season, according to the annual financial report. And this, still waiting for Bolton's, who are in the shit, and Sheffield Wednesday's. But so far, championship teams made 521 million losses. And in the same breath, the EFL says financial fair play is working very well. You've got people protesting for climate change and trying to push it on the agenda that it's a real, serious issue, which it is. But football going down the drain is a serious issue. How can it sustain itself if anything outside the Premier League is just crumbling? And Bolton now, they still haven't sorted out that Brentford game. It's getting ridiculous now. And I think by the time this podcast comes out, the EFL board will be meeting again to try to rearrange this fixture. And I think they've advised Bolton EFL regulations provide that any match can be played within 4 days at the end of a normal playing season, which is obviously Sunday, the 5th of May. The ramifications of, a club not being able to pay its players and also its staff. I mean, people say, well, why don't they just put out an under-15s, under-18s team? But, these are people who also want to be paid, and also there'll be scabs for, like, breaking the picket line, and anybody with a principle, wouldn't do that. They're in the same boat, essentially. So pretty much I think the easiest way to sort this one out is go 3-0 Brentford, there you go.
You would have thought that would be the logical thing to do, because regardless of the Bolton side of the argument, you're still messing around Brentford away fans. It's going to be potentially a long journey on a midweek game.
But this is something you've got to foresee and look at. 6 months ago, they should be thinking, Bolton are in the shit here. Well, let's try to sort this out as we go along. I mean, new owners came along at the time of the Villa game. That's why the Villa game went ahead, and they promised this amount, and then obviously this amount has never appeared yet. And the new owner, we don't want to go into detail now, has a bit of history in previous ownerships. It's a bit of a shame, but as I said, the bigger picture is, football's got a serious issue because of what the Premier League has essentially done and wants teams that try to, you know, get in the Premier League and start spending these fucking stupid amounts of money on goalkeepers, as we've just highlighted, once they get relegated, you know, parachute payments, unless you get straight back within 3 or so years, you suddenly, the infrastructure, the business infrastructure of your club is completely unstable. And, you know, Bolton were a mainstay once upon a time in the Premier League. I mean, I remember they were third at Christmas once, and you had Sam Allardyce saying, we need to be challenging for the Champions League now, give me more money. And then he handed his resignation in, essentially saying they lacked ambition, because when he got them to the top three, they didn't back him. But this is another reason why these clubs get top heavy, and then when they do go down, they explode. You know, this is a Bolton team that I think they finished seventh in that league, and they finished in the UEFA Cup twice in 3 seasons. I mean, famously, they drew at Bayern Munich 2-2, and they beat Atletico Madrid 1-0, and they were making history. And obviously, they were just known for being one of the founder members, and you know, their history was distant. But then, you know, they were creating new history, and now they're in, you know, can't even fulfil fixtures. So football's got a bit of a problem. Anyway, let's crack on with the show. First of all, thank you very much to the new Mile Man Said patrons, to Philip O'Donohoe, Simon Laws, Rufus Brode, and Ruben Shipway for upping his pledge as well. And also, he just came up under the name James.
The James.
I don't know if that's the band James.
Oh, sit down.
But anyway, thank you very much. And please do help support the show and the website, because at the moment, it is essentially a pointless exercise. I'll be honest with you, for me to put any posts up on the website, because I just get swamped in the clickbait that's out there. So going forward, essentially, we just want to be a completely clickbait-free site, and you know, just be genuine in a world that's just full of, you know, it's a cesspool of
shit
and nonsense. So please do support the podcast and the website by becoming a My Old Man Said patron. Go to myoldmansaid.com and click on the patron link on the menu bar for all the details and any questions. Get in touch. You can also be a Facebook supporter. If you see the become a supporter on the Facebook page, that is another way to access it. And you will also get the bonus podcasts on the Facebook page as well. Right. Thank you very much. And on to what should we have next? The Scott Hogan touch count meter. I feel that you need to make a little jingle for that, Chris, but I'll
work on
that out. I'll just put that one.
Okay.
To be honest with you, I was tracking down to see if Hulk Hogan had a chant or something that I could use.
Well, he did have his entrance music, didn't he? He used to come out to "I Am a Real American."
Well, I'm amazed that you know that. How come you know that?
Banger.
Because that's what I could find, and I just thought that might go over people's heads a bit too much. But I was just going to use like the jingle of the start of that song, but I just thought, yeah, it's too much.
What,
over people's
fight
heads,
for man. Your life, fight for what's right.
Anyway,
Scott
let's
Hogan
crack on.
Sits on the bench.
And he's actually managed to get off the bench 3 times since the last meter reading.
And he scored.
And he scored a goal as well in one of those games. Unfortunately, we don't have... I like it when it's a face-off. We don't have an opponent for you. And your team, you were represented by Max Stokes in the last edition, are 3-0 up since we turned it into a competition.
Walk in the park.
So how do you want to do this? Do you want to do total for 3 games, or should we go through the games individually?
Let's go for a total. This makes it harder. So he came off the bench in all 3.
Well, I'm going to give you the minutes
and the
opponents and the score.
Okay.
Well, we'll go through them one by one, and then you'll have a total. Right, first one, Sheffield United beat Forest 2-0. 65 minutes, Hogan enters the field of play. How many touches?
10.
4.
Wow, fucking hell.
Back to his best.
Jesus Christ.
Right, next game, away against Hull.
Okay.
Sheffield United won 3-0. How do you win and how do you lose here?
I mean we're all losers, let's be honest.
Yeah. All right, well, we'll just go through it and I'll give you a verdict if you did well or not at the end. Right, Hull, Sheffield United win 3-0 away. Hogan enters the fray on the 70-minute mark. So he's got 20 minutes.
5.
No, not even close. You should have gone for the 5 in the first one. 13 touches.
Wow.
So he got involved.
Lively.
And that, lively for 20 minutes. That is, I think, pound for pound, minute for touch.
Sparky.
That is probably one of his best efforts, because normally if he does 90 minutes, he's about 12. So 13's pretty.
It's easy. Pretty it's tasty. Easy when you're 3-0 up, though, isn't it?
It is. It is. They were probably doing the old ole ole and just kept passing it to Hogan. Right. Third and final game, Sheffield United. Sorry, what have we got here? You went for 12 in the first one.
Yeah.
Then 5. Yeah. Okay, I'll just write these down. Right. In the third one, I like how I tried to make this out to be a big, like, daytime...
It's a game show, isn't it?
Game show, yeah. Right, third one, third and final game, Sheffield United 2, Ipswich 0, pretty much securing Sheffield United Premier League football next season. Scott Hogan actually starts and played 62 minutes, so he got a good hour in there. How many touches?
Probably back to his usual self, including the goal. I'm going to say 14.
Ooh, not bad, not bad. 17.
Ooh.
So I think that game against Hull, he was going absolutely crazy. 13 touches in 20 minutes. So in total, so your total was, if my maths are correct, 12, 5, 14, 31. And the actual total was 34. Oh. So 3 out.
I know old Scotty too well, you see.
That is pretty formidable. I'm giving you another win. So it's 4-0.
That's and obviously, congratulations to Scott Hogan, who's managed to get himself promoted.
Yeah, he could do a double promotion.
I was going to say, I nearly said for his endeavours, but clearly not. But no. Congratulations to the other players.
Yeah, I mean, hardly any touches, but he manages to score and get promoted in one game.
Does he still get the promotion bonus then, do we think?
Well, there's other lines of questioning coming out saying, so does he return to us for the playoffs?
No.
And I don't, he doesn't,
his
does
contract's
he?
Till June, isn't it? A loan deal expires in June.
Yeah, that contract would be there to cover the playoffs if Sheffield United needed them. So that's the answer to that question. Do you think Sheffield United will put in and give him a squad place for next season in the Premier League?
I mean, they're a Premier League team now, so they've got 100 million for finishing bottom, so we'll have our 12 million back. Thank you very much.
Would you put it on Scott Hogan if you were Sheffield United?
No.
Chris Wilder's obviously he's not a fool, because he's almost a serial promotion winner.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, we've spoken about him on numerous occasions, haven't we?
Yeah, with Oxford, Northampton, and obviously Sheffield United twice now. And you'd think he'd be wiser than to drop a shed of money on Scott Hogan. But, you know, there's hope for us here. Hopefully we'll get our money back. CrossFit, fingers crossed.
We might take Ross McCormack with him.
No, he's let's not go ludicrous. Right, on to, well, it's not sad. The winning run is over. We got it up to 10 games, which is historic.
It was historic.
Never happened before. Never happened before in our history. I'm always a bit dubious when you break a record or you set a record, like, you know, people comparing Tammy Abraham's achievements to Peter Withe. And, you know, you're not in the top tier when the record happens. So, but still, it's, you know, the fact that we've never done it before is, you know, in our illustrious history is obviously, you know, a big thing.
And the manner in which we've done it's been great.
Yeah, all kinds of crazy wins as well. I mean, it's been nothing but entertaining, and Leeds game did not disappoint. No. It's gone from winning run to unbeaten run now. We are 12 games. The Stoke 1-1 draw suddenly slips in being relevant yet again.
But ultimately, it doesn't mean anything if you don't go up, as we've said previously.
Exactly. So going into the Leeds game, it was a bit of a funny one, because Leeds, I mean, Leeds should be automatic promotion, but I mean, just quickly... They were top at Christmas, and historically in recent years, and let's go back to 2008 when Wolves were top at Christmas. So this is the last 10 seasons.
Yeah,
the last 10 seasons. If you're top at Christmas, you get automatically promoted unless you're Leeds.
Crazy.
7 out of 10, I think, have won the league. You know, Wolves, Newcastle, QPR, Cardiff, Bournemouth, Newcastle, Wolves again. You normally walk away with the trophy as well. So, you know, Leeds, when you look at their playoff record, I think they've been in the Championship playoffs 4 times and failed, or maybe that's the final, I can't remember. But they definitely had 4 failed attempts in the playoffs as well. So it's not looking good for them at this moment in time. But with that said, both teams went into that game. It was kind of a nothing game, because Leeds played a day later of Sheffield United. So it was game, set and match in terms of automatic promotion. Stupid 12 o'clock kickoff, which I was going to go on the Saturday, but couldn't do it at this. And the Leeds fans, actually, to their credit, were chanting Sky TV is fucking shit.
Hey, fair game.
The thing is, I don't see fans being united in voicing their concerns about what's happening on these matters of, you know, changing a game. So suddenly the away fans have to get up at like ridiculous o'clock in the morning. I mean, I remember going on a march several years ago, and that was quite well attended by all different team supporters. And then the next one, the year later, you know, because it was raining, hardly anybody there. And you just think, the Premier League and pretty much football per se can just take the mickey out of this large, massive consumer base that if actually had a voice together, they could basically dictate more of the conditions. But, you know, hey-ho. Anyway, the game actually was a much more feistier and a better contest than I actually expected. I mean, Dean Smith went pretty strong. Obviously, Abraham was missing, which was a card we'll get to play in the playoffs if we play him again, hopefully. Abraham will be fit. What was your take on the game? Before we get into the obvious...
Yeah, I mean, you put the chaos that happened later on to one side for a minute, and you'd actually say, you know, it's a good name for a good game for the neutral. It was certainly two teams that you would say you can see why they're where they are. They both tried to play, you know, high tempo, proper football, but also there was a little bit of niggle in the game, which I think made for probably an entertaining spectacle for the neutral. Possibly both sides were a little bit kind of wasteful in the final third, but actually a lot of the approach play from both teams was really good.
Yeah, we don't care about the neutral, by the way. But already before, you know, even after the first hour, you thought this is, you know, pretty much a tune-up. This is going to be a tasty final if both teams actually made it to the playoff final. Because, yeah, you know, unless there's a miracle and Leeds get hammered and West Brom beat Derby. I think Leeds play in Ipswich, aren't they?
Yes, on the final day, yeah. They go,
yeah,
to
unless Leeds get beat by Ipswich and West Brom beat Derby, then we're playing West Brom in the final. So, you mean, already you were thinking that it's going to be a tasty final if this is the final, and that's without what happened. And, I mean, before we get on to that, what do you think? I mean, is, you know, Leeds fans crying about Grealish diving and jump, you know, what was your take on that?
It's how Grealish plays. You know, some of the tackles are probably lighter than others, but there's one or two. There was a Cooper tackle that was a leg breaker. There was the Dallas one that ended up with Bielsa getting booked for instead of the player. So they clearly had a plan how to negate the Grealish threat, and that was leather him.
Yeah. And we've seen that numerous times.
I mean, and Grealish relishes that side of the game, fortunately, but you do have to kind of try and protect him where possible. I don't think the ref had a particularly good game for either. I think both sets of supporters were pretty united in their sort of scathing review of the referee and his assistants.
You know, when you see all the clips, it's like, well, they're obviously targeted him, you know, as most teams do. It's part of the game plan.
I think Leeds, at certain points, Leeds just weren't very clever. You know, they're diving in knowing full well if they make contact, he is going to go down. He's not diving. Yeah. He's putting him in stupid positions, and they're kind of like, no, they're biting, aren't they?
Yeah, and you know, he's going to bait them in.
Absolutely.
Obviously. I mean, if Grealish was doing you know, acrobatics in the penalty box trying to get penalties, then he's a diver, and you can label him. But when it's like,
well, they're trying to leather him in his own half.
Yeah, in open play, then it's like, well, you know, if he's going to roll a little bit more, then why not pick up the advantage? It's because he's been targeting, and what's he going to do? Just like take the foul and not get an actual free kick. It's, you know, it's come on, it's common sense, people. He's not like this Ashley Young diving in penalty boxes and Luis Suarez and, you know, all those kind of guys. And by the way, the reason why they're known as top players is because they're getting results at the end of the day.
Yeah.
But I mean, what was the main chances in the first? It was probably Codger fluffed his. I mean, I thought if we had Abraham, we'd have beaten Leeds. And that's,
I think,
what
yeah,
I'm
the big Codger chance, I think, in the second half, Abraham would probably bury that. And I think what you noticed, you're less so against sort of in the Millwall game, I think, because we were, you know, playing against a far inferior side. But at Leeds, when we're going to play one up front, you all of a sudden, Abraham's play outside of the penalty area, it really shines through, which Codger, you just don't get enough out of him for him to be the lone striker against a good team.
And that's why people will refer to as Codger being isolated up front, because he doesn't gel.
He doesn't lead the line in the same way that someone like Keenan Davis can put himself about. You know, Davis might not offer you the goal threat, but Codger, at least, you know, I mean, he came on against in the Millwall game, for example, and played down the middle and did a really good job for sort of 15 minutes, because he can put himself about, and he will give the likes of a Pontus Janssen something to think about, whereas I don't see Codger doing that. It's just not how he plays.
Well, let's go on to the incident. And when like neutral pundits, and as I said, we don't care about neutrals, look at this in isolation, and we're talking about the Leeds goal, and they're saying, oh, well, you know, they should play to the whistle, whatever. What they're most of them are doing, the neutrals who haven't actually watched the whole game, is they're missing out the context of what happened before. And that was Conor Hourihan, who was on the right flank, and he spotted the Leeds player down, and he put the ball out, and he got a bit of a barracking from the Villa fans, who are actually, you know, right down in that corner. Now, you know, I'm kind of a, you know, win by all means necessary kind of chap when it comes to football, and you're just thinking, what are you doing, Hourihan? Just fuck them, play to the whistle. And I think this is what set the whole what came after in motion, because if he had played to the whistle there, then I think Leeds would have attacked us with intensity, and they wouldn't have slowed down. And that's what basically wrong-footed everybody, is when they slow down and they appeared to be putting the ball out.
I think that's ultimately where the annoyance comes, isn't it? Is that they've yeah. kind of shown that, oh, we go, we have every intention, we're on the touchline, we'll roll it out, no worries. And then everything stops, and then all of a sudden the guy rolls the ball through and click, yeah. scores. You know,
because if Hourihan hadn't done what he'd done, and if Hourihan had played on, Leeds would have played on, so Villa would have been defended as normal, Leeds would have attacked as normal, and, you know, I think that game would have ended 0-0.
I don't think ultimately either team deserved to win or lose that game. I think it was two yeah. very even sides, and I think in the end, you know, common sense prevailed.
Just to finish the Conor Hourihan putting the ball out, I don't think, I'm hoping that Conor Hourihan wouldn't put the ball out like that if it was a Wembley final. I think you have to play to the whistle, because if this was a bit of a nothing game in that respect, and I think that, you know, that intensity maybe wasn't completely there. And
I think that's pretty fair. So, certainly in the neither team being particularly cutthroat.
And I'm hoping that he'll get the memo, you know, that don't do that again. But anyway, going to back to what actually kicked off, and there's only one man that, I think the main man here is Patrick Bamford in more ways than one. When Leeds scored, and the first thing that happened to click was Hourihan grabbed him, and rightly so, because the commentator, even when Leeds were down the flank, said...
Codger down. No recognised striker on the bench. Well, again, I think will Leeds put it out? Oh, this is controversial. Click goes on and scores, and Villa will be fuming.
I mean, to be fair to the guy, it's a cracking finish, isn't it? You know, he cuts inside really well and whips it in the bottom corner. It's a great finish, but
he's playing a defence that Almo had already given up, yeah. and you know the other players are, you know, playing at 75% effort, really.
Yeah, there's certainly the air of...
They're in two
yeah,
minds.
There's the air of, well, surely he's not going to stick this in, and he does. And that's yeah. when all hell breaks loose.
So I think Hourihan, no problem with that. And then you get a position where he's hanging on to, is it Click? Yeah. And then Bamford's got his arm around the neck of Hourihan from behind.
He throws him to the floor, doesn't he?
And he throws him to the floor while Horahan's holding on to the other player. So, you know, Leeds fans are taking still shots of the video or whatever, where it looks like Horahan's throwing the other guy to the ground. But what they're not actually looking at is there's an arm around his bloody neck. It's Bamford, you know, dragging him to the ground. Fast forward a few seconds, and then Al Ghazi shrugs off Bamford.
Yeah, Bamford's in Al Ghazi's back, isn't he? Al Ghazi sort of turns around yeah. to sort of swipe him off. And then Bamford completely overreacts.
Bamford's on the deck. No idea who put him there, if anybody.
And he didn't even touch his face. I mean, everybody's seen the video. And then suddenly Bamford holds his face, drops down, and you're just thinking, what a fucking prick. What you don't expect is Al Ghazi to get sent off for it. And, you know, obviously the player didn't expect it either.
Yeah, you can see as soon as the ref goes to have the conversation with the linesman, at that point you're starting to fear the worst, when you can kind of, yeah. you can almost lip read what they're saying, and it's... You just think, oh, this is going to be one of those incidents.
Now, isn't it funny that you should only really give a red card if you're 100% sure that something's happened?
Yeah.
And that official...
Hashtag VAR.
And, exactly. And that official has, in his mind, seen it. But how could he have seen it? Because it didn't actually happen, which is, I mean, it's just fucking ridiculous.
Well, he gets the early decision wrong because the guy's offside with the ball through anyway, so he's not paying attention properly anyway. And there's so much going on in the melee that I don't see.
Yeah, I haven't seen an angle to 100% rubber stamp he was offside. I'm not totally sure. I've heard, you know, commentators
I'll give the guy the benefit of the doubt at this point anyway.
I mean, just from a podcast point of view, unless you've seen an angle, and I don't think they've been that apparent, that it's you know, it's potentially a 50-50 one, but actually that isn't really a you know, you don't even need that as an extra point to attack the officials with, because what he's done in the first place, the main thing is, you know, it's an atrocious call. And that's why there should be VAR, just because it would sort that out 100%, and I think you'd find that Bamford would have got sent off there.
And of course, now, you know, with the retrospective stuff, Al Ghazi's fine. You know, he'll more than likely play.
Who has become an important piece in the Dean Smith jigsaw.
Him and Taylor have developed a really strong partnership on the left-hand side, haven't they? Which at one point this season, you'd have thought would have been the last thing they'd have been getting praised for.
They're in a position where if you were picking your strongest Villa 11 going back a few months, you perhaps wouldn't even have them in it.
No.
But now they're kind of a bit of a dynamite duo there. And Al Ghazi, I just get the feeling, you know, he's going to get better.
I think he's confident, isn't he? He's really settled in, and I think he's found his place, and he knows how the team works for him. And I think he kind of sees the prize at the end of the...
Yeah, because he's asking to take penalties, as we alluded to in the last show. He's asking to take penalties, asking for free kicks. And obviously, Hourihane and Grealish are, you know, saying, actually, that's my job. But it's good to see him kind of shining.
And I like the fact that he takes responsibility, a little bit like we've said about Grealish in the past and a couple of other players like McGinn. He wants the ball, doesn't he? He wants the ball in key areas. He wants to influence the game. Some people shy away. He says, I want to get the ball and I'm going to run at the fullback. And you know what he's going to do every time. And I think now that he's getting the support of Taylor, he feels a little bit more confident to go, do you know what? I can look at going forward. I don't always have to be thinking about bailing my partner out.
And I think there's a few levels from him to potentially come, which he's got some tricks, and he's obviously he's got a decent, he's 6 foot, he's got a physical presence.
The big thing to come from him ultimately will be consistency, won't it? And I think that's something Smith's discussed before.
But against Bristol City, for example, everything pretty much set up pretty much everything, didn't he? Hourihane, no action against him.
Rightfully so.
I didn't even know that was an issue. I've since seen on social media Leeds fans going, oh, what about the punch Hourihane
threw?
And it's like, it's called a phantom punch, I think, because I never saw him throw one punch, and he didn't, because he didn't. And it's just like, sometimes fans see what they want to see.
He's getting involved, and I like to see that. The fact that, sometimes we've certainly said to him, he comes across a bit nice. Well, in recent times, he's definitely shown he's got a bit of snap and like some bite to his personality, which is great.
Yeah, I think when that prick came on the pitch in the Blues game, and
he was right at the front row, wasn't he? He was queuing up.
I think he grabbed the guy, and he was, ready to run him through. Probably should have been allowed to, actually. But, funny thing is, I remember looking at that footage again and seeing McGinn was making sure he was nowhere to be seen, because naturally he would have been straight in there, but realised his yellow card situation.
He very nearly got himself sent off soon after anyway with a pretty reckless tackle, but we won't go into that.
Yeah.
He's good.
He picked up a yellow, which means that only a foolish manager would play him against Norwich. And Dean Smith has already, in the post-match of the Leeds game,
said
he's not going to play him, and rightly so. To be honest, Dean Smith took a few risks in that Leeds game, unnecessary risks. Did he need to play McGinn? Did he need to play Mings? Did he need to even play Grealish? Because obviously they set about him.
I think it was probably important for him to, he wanted to give Villa a really good sort of gauge of where are we at against, the top sort of top two, top three sides. Where are we close? Answer, yes. Injuries-wise, though, you're absolutely right. You could have had, certainly it's a couple of the tackles on Grealish. They could have been catastrophic for the playoff campaign. I don't expect to see that team start against Norwich by any means, but we'll come on to that later.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
To be honest, I think it, you know, although he's taken risks on the players, in this situation, you wanted to put a marker down against Leeds. Yeah. And the important thing was not to get beat by them. But also, the one thing that we learned from this game, and I think Tyrone Mings summed it up in his post-match tweet, was we will not be bullied by Leeds because we've got enough.
Absolutely.
We've got the characters. He loved that game, Mings. It was his kind of game,
wasn't it? It was physical.
Like a pig in shit. He was smiling after the game and saying it was brilliant.
I think a few of the players, you could tell it's... they like those kind of games. Even Grealish likes the physical stuff, doesn't he? He's come out and said it before.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And you've got, I mean, Taylor likes it. I think Elmo's stepped up in the last few weeks and he likes, you know, he made a good block.
I think Horahan's grown into that style of play.
Yeah. McGinn, it's his middle name.
I mean, normally, I think if he hadn't have had disciplinary things looming over him, I think you'd have probably seen an extra 10%, 20% out of McGinn at Leeds.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I think, because we've shown we've matched them, and, you know, Leeds are, I mean, I call them dynamic and, you know, physical. You know, for example, we've spoken about that Derby team and how they're not that physical. And if they're on song, they can beat a lot of the teams in the Championship, and, you know, hence why they're up there and thereabouts in the playoffs. But when they came against us over two games, we beat them, you know, 7-0 over
at
two
at
games.
An absolute canter.
And when they've come up against Leeds Derby, they're similarly 6-1 down over two games, lost both. Yeah. So that shows you there are kind of levels to that kind of more up-tempo, you know, more intensive kind of play. And, you know, we've shown in this episode that we've actually matched them. But as you said, I think we've got 10% more out of McGinn, who won't be walking a tightrope in terms of yellow cards. And obviously Tammy Abraham comes in, that changes the whole dynamic and allows us to play with one up top.
And I think to be fair, you know, obviously you know, in regards to the whole incident, and we'll come on to that about the goal, Bielsa gets a lot of credit from the game for the sort of the moral side of things, but I'd actually say tactically he probably got it right on Grealish in that game. Bruce similarly did it at Sheffield Wednesday, actually, where they've actually managed to shut Grealish down. Grealish at Elland Road didn't actually get that chance at any point to really get into a position where he could really hurt Leeds, because Leeds were a little bit more switched on at the back, and they kind of... I think both teams managed to keep each other at arm's length to a certain extent. You know, they were, both teams had a couple of good chances, but it wasn't like either team was sort of bombarding the goal, was it? Or neither keeper had a string of great saves. Or,
I mean, to be honest, Leeds, like they were at Villa Park, were very wasteful. I mean, their finishing was appalling at Villa Park, especially in that first half. I mean, we were 2-0 up and they outplayed us. And similarly in this game, I think we had the better chances. They had perhaps more chances earlier doors especially. And some of their finishing was woeful. And to the point that after two or three, you just thought, well, they're not really any threat. They've got no real end product.
And that's kind of shown, hasn't it, in the sort of the second half of the season. You look at the amount of goals they've scored, and yeah, you know, their main striker, Roof's injured.
And now Bamford's missing for two games.
And they're without Alioski as well. So they've, you know, the second half of the season, they have shown, you know, having lost seven games, they are not the team they were, you know, earlier in the season.
We'll talk about them, what's happened to them recently when we discuss the playoff situation and the potential of meeting them again. But the Villa goal, let's just quickly cover that. I mean, I joked on social media that it was goal of the season for Albert Adoma, because he essentially took it from his own half, waltzed through
the whole team,
practically the whole team, as if he was invisible, and then obviously put it away. Was it easier than Hutton against the Blues? That's open up for debate.
I mean, the pressure was on.
I put a poll up, and obviously people said no.
I mean, to be fair,
easier.
I'd say that Pontus Janssen put up a better fight than than Craig Gardner.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, it's quite interesting, and not a lot of people picked up on this, but before that decision to give the goal was made, the first conversation is Pontus Janssen and Dean Smith.
Yes.
And Pontus Janssen's basically saying, no, you know, no. And Dean Smith, I think, is suggesting it at that stage.
I think that's when John Terry and Jedinak weighed in.
Yeah, and then I think you see Dean Smith basically saying, fuck off, to Janssen, to put it politely, but not put words into Dean Smith's mouth, because Dean Smith had his back turned to the camera, but his body basically, you know, is saying that. And then you see Bielsa with his arm on Smith and obviously going through the translator, and that's obviously when it's the decision is made. But Pontus Janssen obviously has that altercation with Smith initially, and then obviously when it's back on the pitch and Albert Adama and Neil Taylor, I thought Adama would serve it up for Taylor to put home for his it's probably his best chance to score ever, sure.
Gone. In smoke.
You'll never have that chance, Neil Taylor, again. But yeah, no, I mean, you know, you deliberate. Well, what had happened if Janssen had blocked it and it had gone off for a corner? Would they have to keep playing?
Yeah, probably. I mean, Bielsa wasn't happy with him, was he? And Janssen, there seemed to be you know, words had between the pair of them as well.
Yeah, and I think another Leeds player had a word with him as well. But that would have been quite funny if, you know, the ball goes off for a corner, then they take the corner, all the Leeds players are just standing there, statues, and then, you know, Janssen heads it out.
Yeah.
And it just carries on. And then Villa shoot, it hits the post.
Villa just can't hit the target.
could have got embarrassing there. So that's probably why Adama didn't pass it to Taylor. He took it.
But, you know, fortunately, the game ended fairly in a draw. And I think with all the retrospective results that have come back, with Hourihan being, you know, off the hook and El Ghazi rightfully being acquitted and Bamford likely to face a 2-game ban, just, if anything, just for being a cunt, completely justified.
But in a nutshell, Dean Smith and Bielsa saved the referee's face and the official's face. Because if that goal hadn't happened, that equaliser hadn't happened, Villa fans were ready to kick off. It was, I mean, I was, you know, fuming. I wasn't even at the fucking game. It was just like when injustice kicks in on such a scale like that, like not only dubious goal, I mean, yes, in isolation placed to the whistle, but, there is context to what happened. And then that sending off, and it's not a sending off, and this has happened to Villa a few times in the past when it's just like, oh, for fuck's sake. When Villa are in a good position, then it just collapses because of incompetent officials, and that's why I'm completely VAR. And the only problem with VAR, there's nothing wrong with VAR, it's just how the football authorities have tried to introduce VAR is just a joke. They should have really thought about it. And then bang, you know, trial it, of course, and then put it out. But the way they've communicated it and made it this grey area still, when it should be VAR in that game, El Ghazi's not sent off, Bamford probably has to go. And it doesn't obviously solve the
moral dilemma, as it were. But
the moral dilemma, but it's not there to do that. The moral dilemma is, you know, something else. It makes sure that there's no injustice in terms of Villa will actually have 11 men on the pitch to try to, you know, get the goal back.
Which I actually thought, you know, when we went down to 10 men, I thought we put in a fantastic shift defensively when Leeds kind of had their tails up. And I think Villa actually shut up shop pretty well.
And that was another point scorer in terms of if we meet again.
Oh, very much so, that we can keep a team at arm's length of that quality.
We kept them at arm's length with 10 men, and as we said, Mings was immense, and his clearance off the line obviously being the highlight.
And the game finished obviously in quite comical fashion with one Mili Jedinak being the target man up front on his own.
It was a joy to watch.
To watch the beard in full flow.
As I've said on every episode, why Bruce never played Jedinak as a centre-forward, I will never know. It was the obvious yeah. choice. Why he tried him at centre-back, complete waste of time. Yeah. But sorry, going back to, you did some research on this and you haven't even mentioned it.
Yes, you know, off the back of the incident at Elland Road, we'd had a little read-up to find, well, has this happened before in English football? In which it has, and not only has it happened, there's a Villa link of one Harry Forrester. Oh, obviously, I don't think he ever put on a Villa shirt, did he? But he came through the youth system. I think he was around the next gen era, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I think he was highly tipped. But I knew this would have happened before because it's something, you know, there must have been a precedent, but I didn't know exactly when.
So I think it was August 2015, if I'm right in saying. I think it was the first day of the season as well. So Forrester accidentally scored a last-minute goal for Doncaster against Bury when I think it was a throw-in for a drop ball was given to him. It's bounced up, he's pinged it, and it's gone over the goalkeeper. Paul Dickov at the time, who is his manager for Doncaster, was later awarded a special fair play award for basically allowing Bury to run through and score a 95th minute equaliser.
Yeah, and I think Bielsa, I don't think he'll win an award, but what he does do, I think he does wipe the slate clean from that Spygate.
I think so. I think he certainly gained a lot of, a lot of credit. And I think because it was a live TV game as well, of course, it gives it a lot more press than potentially if it had been a much lower game.
I mean, I read an article just to ram home the fact that it actually was Dean Smith's suggestion, and it was good to see the Villa manager thinking on the spot rather than just moaning in retrospect after the game.
It could have very easily just been handbags on the touchline as well and nothing gained from it.
Yeah, it was like a rational suggestion. And they put right, obviously, the rescinding of the three-game ban of El Ghazi was the ultimate right in the end. But in terms of the actual game and the score, it kind of put right, because I think ultimately that game would have finished 0-0.
Yeah.
Anyway, local newspaper, Yorkshire Post, fans of both teams have been suggesting this is a potential rehearsal for the playoff final. Now, I wouldn't want to bang on about that, because I think of all the tests left ahead in the playoffs, I think the double date with the Baggies is the hardest task of anything that's going to be put forward. I fancy us against Leeds on an open pitch at Wembley in a one-off. Baggies, I'm not 100% sure, but at the same time, if we hammered the Baggies both legs, you wouldn't be surprised.
I think it's the thing of having to go to the Hawthorn second leg, isn't it? I think we're reasonably confident against anybody coming to Villa Park, and our defensive record currently is very good. Albion always give you a chance.
We did put up a good show against the Baggies at the Hawthorns. I mean, better than we did at Villa Park.
And I actually think Albion were a better side then, and we were a worse side.
We'll talk about that game as it comes onto the horizon. Just mentioning that dress rehearsal, though, you did some Spygate stats, which essentially is Leeds. Obviously, they were top, kicking ass. And as we alluded to earlier on, most teams that are top at Christmas, if they're not winning the league, they do get promoted. It's happened in the last 10 seasons. But since Spygate, as Mr. Budd found out, Leeds' form has dropped substantially.
Limited, yeah. I mean, in the 18, 19 games since that, they've won 9, fair enough, but they've been defeated 7 times, which is, you'd call it sort of mid-table, very mediocre form with 2 draws, but also, I suppose, showing why they've had the run they've had. In those 18 games, they've only scored 25 and conceded a goal a game. With Villa, obviously, in comparison, Villa had played their 17. Villa had won 11, drawn 5 and lost 2 and scored 32, keeping 6 clean sheets, taking home 38 points, which is a 9-point swing on Leeds, which is a big points difference for a team who are obviously in the automatic positions.
So what you're basically saying is Leeds were profiteering on their illicit information from spying on other teams' training.
Well, quite possibly.
It's proven.
The stats...
Proven.
The stats don't, yeah.
You've proven
the stats
it.
Don't lie, Dave. I mean, essentially, Leeds have stopped scoring.
Because they've got no idea how the other team's defence plays now. I've said I feel confidence against Leeds at Wembley. Would you, in a nutshell?
With Abraham, yes. And as you said, I think on a bigger pitch, and I also think if when you've got McGinn back without the disciplinary issues looming large, I think you're going to get a very, very energetic Villa side. And I also think now, when I look a little bit further on the horizon as far as the injury situation we've had, we're actually coming up to a point for the first time in certainly Smith's reign that we've actually got pretty much a full-strength squad to pick from for the first time in the whole season. I mean, our squad depth now is, quite frankly, a joke at this level.
I think the only question is Hourihan or Whelan at Wembley, and I think that you saw at Elland Road, I was expecting Whelan, and I think Smith was going, right, let's see how Hourihan reacts, because I think he had one eye on, right, let's be offensive at Wembley, and if we get there, and let's go for Hourihan. And I think Hourihan passed the test to get the start at Wembley if we do play Leeds.
I think he gives you that extra gear, doesn't he, in the final third that maybe Whelan doesn't. Yeah. But I think, do you know what? I think most people now would happily trust both of them. That's one of the things that, you know, everyone believes in most of the options we've got in all positions now. I don't look at Villa and think, oh, we've got a real weak link there.
Yeah. Well, I think Whelan may get the nod for the Baggies game.
I would have thought so, especially away from home, depending on obviously how the first one pans out.
Yeah. So in a nutshell, Smith's has got a malleable, let's say, first, third. I mean, the defence, the good thing about that, people slot in and out of that, especially the centre-back situation. But I think it would be Mings, just because Courtney House has basically disappeared and hasn't really got the momentum of games now leading into the playoffs.
He's a cracking player to have in your match day 18.
Yeah,
and defensively, actually, a little word on Jed Steer, who obviously since coming back from you know, his loan spell has done fantastically well. You know, I think he's had 14 starts in a Villa shirt this season. He's won 12 games. He's actually yet to lose a game in a Villa shirt.
Yeah, it's a pretty good omen.
Yeah.
Norwich game, we don't want to go into too much detail about this because I think it's a bit of a dead rubber game. Norwich will essentially secure the title if they get a draw. Villa will want to keep unbeaten, so they'll be happy with the draw. And I think there's going to be big changes. I mean, what's the rule? Run the rule about...
So the EFL, I think it's Regulation 24, essentially stipulates, you know, how many players you can rest. And it's for any league match played on or after the 4th Thursday in March, any team sheet for a league game should include at least 10 outfield players who featured on the team sheet for the league match before.
And on that sheet, the match day squad, you've got like your Bjarnasons, your Lansbury's, Jedinak. I think they'll all get games in there. Yeah. All start,
and you've still got people like, you know, Chester Hawes, Kalinic, who can come in. I don't think you're not going to see the kids getting a run out by any means, but you will see one or two. Obviously, McGinn is a guarantee not to play. I think Abraham, you might find, is involved, whether he either starts and gets subbed early or he comes off the bench. I don't think
he'll get 90 minutes.
I don't think Grealish will. Although I think Grealish will start, I think you'll probably see him get an hour and someone like Lansbury get a run out. And I suppose one of the other little side notes for the Norwich game will be, will Alan Hutton get a bit of a send-off, I suppose? You know, will he get a run out off the bench or a rare start now? Or will Smith, you know, stick with what's working defensively?
I think you'll see Alan Hutton in that game because there is that avenue, you know, for a bit of sentiment.
Even if it's just
here
off the
there.
Bench, I think he might come off the bench and get a little, you know, let him get that applause from the crowd and stuff.
Yeah.
Because in reality, I can't actually see him even being on the bench in the playoffs. When you've got a full strength squad, you're going to put Chester and Hawes on the bench over him.
But what about right back?
Mm-hmm, maybe.
Because, you know, if Elmo goes off injured.
True.
We used to have about 6 right backs. What happened to all of them? They're playing for
Ipswich.
They're
all getting relegated, aren't they?
If Courtney House is fit, he may start.
And you might even see Kalinic get a run out, obviously, just to make sure he's got a little bit of game time behind him going into the playoffs. I don't think he'll start. I think Steer has the shirt now.
Yeah, I think Lansbury will probably get a start. Because there's a few players that it's all right at them sitting on the bench in the playoffs. That, you know, that's all well and good, but it's good to have them actually have a few games to tune up for if they are needed. And Lansbury, I think, definitely, if he's going to be on the bench in the playoffs, he needs another game.
Well, you need to know minutes. That you can trust your squad, don't you? I think in most positions we know we can. I think there's a couple of guys in midfield, certainly Bjarnason and Lansbury, the two that really spring to mind. Maybe someone like Keenan Davis as well, who you think that they could really do with getting, you know, 60, 70 minutes under their belt, or even 90 where possible. I don't think Lansbury's actually managed to get 90 minutes under his belt for 2 seasons, has he?
Yeah, no, exactly. Anything else in terms of the playoff picture? The only real issue is obviously Derby and Middlesbrough. By the time you listen to this podcast, Derby would have played their game in hand, which is a tricky fixture away to Swansea, who are, over the last 6 games, the 3rd best team in the division on form.
Yeah, they've really crept up, haven't they, from kind of, they've gone relatively under the radar.
Yeah, but it's too little too late for the Swans. But Borough, they've just got to beat Rotherham at Rotherham. Rotherham are down now, so they're pretty much over. So you'll know more than us listeners by the time you listen to this, but if Borough beat Rotherham, then Derby may need something against the Baggies on the final day. Now, the Baggies, if Leeds lose against Ipswich, which I can't really see it, but, you know, Ipswich get an early goal against Leeds, news filters into the Baggies bench, they might up the tempo and go for Derby's throats, because they know if they can beat Derby on the last day and Leeds lose against Ipswich, the Baggies will finish 3rd and avoid the mighty Villa in the semi-finals, which I think they would prefer to do that, and, you know, play potentially Derby or Middlesbrough rather than the local
You'd
Derby.
Have thought so.
But we'd have to play Leeds over 2 legs.
Yeah, I wouldn't fancy that at all.
We might as well take on the Baggies, you know. Save on those getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning if it's ridiculous o'clock, because one of the playoffs kicks off at half 12.
I think it's actually, with how things look at the moment, we'd be likely to be the Saturday at 12 kickoff against the Albion, not the first leg at Villa Park. So
They should have it at 5:30. Like,
oh, yeah,
it
was fun, wasn't it?
Livens it up a little bit, I've found. There's just one issue. We mentioned it at the top of the show that we would talk about it, and it is a big issue. It's Aston Villa's rather lame record against the current top 4 teams. In 7 attempts, we haven't won 1 game. 3 draws, 4 defeats. What is the common denominator?
One, Alan Hutton played in all of them.
Often at left back.
it has to be said. And since, obviously, his injury at Stoke, we haven't lost.
Are we blaming it all on the Huts?
No.
I think we haven't ever played one of the top four teams with, let's say, all our big guns. Obviously, Mings came in, and even, you know, Courtney House, you would consider him.
Yeah.
But let's say, you know, Tuenzebi, Mings, Grealish, Abraham have never been on the same field when we've played the top four teams. So that's what's going to be different in the playoffs. We're going to have our strongest team that we've fielded, I think.
I think so. I think you look at this Villa side now in compared to, say, like, if you use the example of when we got obliterated at Bramall Lane earlier in the season, it's a very different landscape. Be it, you know, on and off the field, I think it's a much more organised team. You look at our defensive record sort of since the Derby game, and you know, since we sort of turned the corner, and it's defensively is what has been the backbone of what's really improved. You know, we were always good going forward, even under Bruce, to be fair. I never thought I'd say that. But this is a team that's had, this team's had firepower, hasn't it, from the word go, really?
Yeah, and it's just a more aggressive and progressive way of playing as well.
I think we're a little bit more clinical, you know, in key areas. I think we're much better on the ball. And I think the big thing we've spoke about for probably two seasons now has been our game management now is much better.
Well, I wouldn't say that. I would say John McGinn's game management is much, much better than his teammates. Well, the Alan Hutton situation is, he's basically been omnipresent in our failure. Alex McLeish signed him. Ever since, we've been useless. But at the same time, he's actually given us the example of the kind of attitude you need to get out of this situation.
He's everything you expect from a cult hero, isn't he? Slightly flawed.
While he's the kind of player that's never going to get us anywhere, ultimately, he's got the attitude of what you exactly want. So he's a bit of an oxymoron in that respect. But anyway, we wish him well, and hopefully he gets a fond send-off at the Norwich game. We shook his hands, didn't we, when we went on that
He got a nice guard of honour, didn't he?
Yeah, he got a guard of honour from some Villa fans, and he got a kiss as well, as a kiss from Dan Rogers, I think it was.
He got groped.
Anyway, I think it's time to wind up the show. Just a quick shout-out to the Aston Villa under-23s, who have also qualified for the playoffs in the second tier of the under-23 Premier League 2. That semi-final will be away at Southampton. I think it's just a one-legged affair.
And seeded, isn't it, I think, essentially?
Yeah, the higher you finish, you're seeded. So because we finished bottom of the pile, we will be away in every game. But, you know, who knows? They've been close before. I went to that game against Arsenal when it was at the Emirates. Hopefully, if it's a decent final, I
remember going to the... I went to the Brighton playoff last year when they lost as well.
Yeah. Anyway, until next time, please do follow on Spotify if that's how you listen. Also, subscribe on iTunes so you know when the show drops first. If you want to wear something fancy to the playoffs, do invest in a My Old Man Said t-shirt as well. There's so many things to do, isn't there? But most of all, please do become a My Old Man Said patron or a Facebook supporter, and that will be the greatest way you can help the
show.
There's
been some very amusing chat on the Facebook group the last couple of weeks, so
Oh, well, I better check that out. Right, until next time, keep dreaming about that win at Wembley. And it's goodbye from me, and it's goodbye from him.
Goodbye.
My old man said...
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.